Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. Cameron, it's the day after Christmas, and here you are producing a podcast. How are you doing, friend?
Fabulous, man. Just few days off, hung out with some family, got some presents. I mean, it was a great weekend.
Cameron, I need you to be more enthused, man. It's the holidays. I'm kind of recovering from the holidays. I love my family, love my wife's family. But after a while, you're like, I just sat on a couch for the last 2 days, checked my phone, watched football, and ate cheesecake bites. I need to chill, you know?
Yeah.
Get back into the swing of things. Well, hey, we're going to talk a lot about Magic this week. Cameron, you've been hitting MTGO pretty hard. Me, much less so. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk, there is a new spoiler for Rivals of Ixalan.
Yeah.
A Dominaria spoiler. We're going to talk about what we'd like to see for 2018. And then we're going to wrap it up with some gaming talk. So.
Indeed.
Cameron. Oh, and the Blade Runner review won't happen this week, but probably next week, right?
I think next week, isn't it? One of these days, it's actually coming out on Blu-ray, and you're not going to have an excuse anymore.
I believe it is actually available to purchase digitally.
Okay.
So as soon as it becomes, I still haven't seen Dunkirk either. Like, these are things I need to check out. It's what Winter Break is for, right? Yep. So, Cameron, you played Modern and Standard. Where would you like to start off?
Let's start with Modern first. Let's see. So I played a blue-white control list, and I went into a friendly league, and I got completely wrecked. I mean, like, I've never been so wrecked playing Modern in a long, long time. My deck was fine. My draws were fine. I felt like I was playing okay, but I just never had the edge in any of my matches, right?
That happens sometimes, Cameron.
It happens, right? So here's the list. I played against Tron, Burn, Storm, Burn, Burn.
You're not like super not like Burn is not a terrible matchup for you, is it?
No. I mean, it really does depend on like the card draws. Like, I mean, I'm not running a ton of counter magic, and if I don't have like a well placed Path to Exile or whatever to get rid of the Goblin Guide early on, that's where I'm going to start getting hurt really, really bad, right? Mm-hmm. And normally I can stabilize at like 2 or 3 life, but you don't want to be stabilized at 2 or 3 life against Burn, right? Because it's like Lightning Bolt, no. Lightning Bolt, okay, dead. You know, so I mean, you can counter one, you can't counter the 3 that are coming at you. I have a lot of trouble playing against Tron. For whatever reason, I mean, the deck is just really, really resilient, right? I mean, mm-hmm. They have so many things going on where if I'm trying to stop them on mana, they have ways to deal with that. If I'm trying to stop their creatures, they have ways to deal with that. They have a resolved Karn. I mean, like, good luck winning against that, right? So there's just all these, like, little elements that was really, really tough. And then Storm, like, I mean, Storm is just a really, really, really good deck. And, I mean, my deck is playing the long game, and Storm is like, great. I can go off twice and still win, and that sort of thing happens. Right?
I would argue that that's actually a really bad matchup for the blue-white control deck, which is kind of counterintuitive. But as a Storm player, if I see a tournament of nothing but blue-white control decks, I am a very happy camper.
As you should be, yeah. So anyway, I ended up going 1-4. I won against one of the Burn opponents. But, man, it was just, like, one of these things of, like, I just remember after Storm, I played against another Burn opponent. I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And then, like, the last matchup, I'm like, no, are you kidding me? This is awful. So I set aside blue-white control, and for a palate cleanser, I played some Standard. And still kind of just playing around with some other decks. And I have yet, for however long energy has been a thing, played an actual rug energy deck. And so I suited up your straight net decked rug energy deck.
Okay, now you're speaking my language, Cameron. I like where this is headed. All right.
And I went 3-2 which was, you know, not awful. I'm not really, I mean, I'm familiar playing against the deck, but honestly, operating that deck, there's a lot of like little nuances here and there where like you can kind of sometimes screw up of whether or not you want to use your Whirler Virtuoso or your Rogue, you know, like all these like little elements that it's a lot of fun, but navigating that deck, there is some skill that goes into it, which I really, really appreciate. The big issue that I have, and I will talk a little bit more about this maybe going on, Standard is not diverse right now. Like, it's feeling... I feel like it's energy and red, and that's all I see. And out of the five matches I played, four of those were energy decks, and I was playing an energy deck, right? So whether it's like the Pummeler Bug deck or the Rug Energy, four color energy, it's still everywhere. And there's no incentive right now, even though there's some really fun, interesting decks out there, there's no incentive to play anything but energy, honestly. Like, I can't tell, like, the control player, like, you should really be playing this blue-white control deck instead of an energy deck, because the energy deck is just so incredibly good. It's crazy. I don't know. Like, I feel like something needs to be done. Like, it's getting to that point. And especially since last year, I mean, if, like, they're getting rid of, like, Emrakul, like, this seems like the opportune moment to maybe upset some people, but for the long game of Standard, it might be beneficial. So I don't know.
Well, we'll have that discussion at length next segment, yes. Cameron. Yes. That was the amuse-bouche of the the middle segment. So hey, I just played Vintage Cube super quickly, and Vintage Cube is definitely it's the cheesecake bite of the Magic Online experience.
This is your second cheesecake bite reference, FYI.
I know, Cameron. I was creating an homage to my previous statement. Like cheesecake bites, it's great this time of year, but maybe not something that you want to consume quite often. And, you know, Moxes, banned cards like crazy. You know, it is just like you can legitimately build a Storm deck. I packed one, picked one, a Reanimate, thinking I was going to be clever and build a Reanimator deck. Well, my Reanimator deck, here's the thing you don't know the first time you're in a Vintage Cube, is you can build a Reanimator deck that would essentially crush any limited deck out there, right? or any limited, but you don't know, it's like a scale of like the relative power level. You definitely don't want to be playing fair in Vintage Cube. That is a bad idea. Right, if you want creatures, you want like at least two Armageddon effects, like that kind of thing. Okay. Anyway, so I build a Reanimator deck, and I only have a few ways to put cards in the graveyard. I don't end up getting Entomb, and so I play against Storm, and then two Reanimator decks, and these Reanimator decks both had Bazaar of Baghdad.
Oh no!
So. I went 1-2. My first match, or my match against Storm, I lost because I missed a mere Battlesphere trigger. But honestly, these are just kind of like screw around. I mean, yeah, you get play points or whatever. And like, as always, this stuff is too expensive for what you're getting. I would prefer more matches. But it is really fun Magic for the sake of having fun Magic. There is not a competitive element to me at all. Mm-hmm. And it's really one of the best. Like, if you never play Magic Online and, you know, you just want to blow $20 over, you know, a few days off on vacation, Vintage Cube is the thing you should do, because you just don't get to experience. I mean, I'm sure there are a few of you out there that experience Vintage Cube in paper. But for most of us, that is not a reality. And it is just like, you know, every deck is 3 to 5 colors. You just do insane things. I turned 2 to Mirror Battlesphere and lost. You know, like, it's that kind of stuff, right?
That sounds fun. Yeah, I really had a hair trigger. I was almost going to play that this weekend, and I ended up opting for Standard instead. But it sounds like it's pretty fun. I might do that this week still.
Yeah, usually I try to play Storm in Vintage Cube and just kind of force it no matter what. And this time I thought I would, you know, I'll be Reanimator, and I've got a semi-decent Reanimator deck, and then I just ran into two Reanimator decks that were light years ahead of mine.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Cameron, we're going to come back. We've got many things to talk about in this middle segment, so we'll be right back. Guys, I want to do a quick, heartfelt thank you to all of our patrons out there. I know Cameron and I don't push our Patreon that much, but all of you have helped the show so much, and this year was a huge year for us. It was Cameron and I going almost exclusively, just he and I. We hit our 200th episode, and there were a lot of things that happened, and we just really appreciate you guys being a part of it. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And we look forward to seeing you in 2018. All right, Cameron. So I'm going to have you go over the new spoiler and new mechanic. This is my Christmas gift to you.
Thanks, man. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. Savior is born. Read the card.
So we have Vana's Hunger. It costs two colorless and one black. It's an instant card with Ascend. If you control 10 or more permanents, you get the City's Blessing for the rest of the game. And then each opponent sacrifices a creature. If you have a City's Blessing instead, each opponent sacrifices half the creatures he or she controls, rounded up. This looks like a fun Magic card to me. I'm into the mechanic. I think that's interesting, the 10 permanents. I think in some ways it might be a race if you're playing like some sort of control whatever. Like there's definitely something there. And yeah, just a good old-fashioned removal card. Like this is this looks fun. Like I'm looking forward to seeing what other things Ascend is. It's very Will of the Council sort of feel to it, like a flavor to it. But yeah, totally into it.
Yeah, this effect, just a basic everyday edict effect, really is standard dependent.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes effects like this are quite good. It's one of those things they wish could cost 2.5 mana, right?
Yeah,
at two mana, an edict effect is almost always playable. At three mana, it rarely sees play, but does on occasion. I need to get into the rules of this Ascend thing. So it's like, as soon as your 10th permanent hits, does this trigger? Or does it have to, you know, I don't really understand how that works. You are right in that it feels very EDH. Like, wow. So, yeah, hey, it seems cool. Now, the thing that I'm pumped about, Cameron, on Christmas Day, Watsy tweeted out a little image. And look, we're not lore guys. No one would ever accuse us of being lore guys. If I'm being really honest, I've had no idea what's going on in Magic for the last decade. I know there are cards with people's names on them. Jace has a hoodie, for example. That's another thing I know.
Yeah.
But anyway, not that guy. Okay. But they tweeted out this image of Teferi, Karn, and Jorah. And I felt this, like, this little moment, like, this feeling in my gut, Cameron. I believe it's called nostalgia. Not because, and I know what you're thinking, Cameron. Aren't all feelings dead to you, Curtis? Mostly. Mostly. But not because of the characters in the image. Like, I'm no stranger to playing Teferi. He's one of my favorite cards in the teaching deck back when that was a thing in Modern. But in the far corner, there seems to be a little bit of the Skyship Weatherlight. And Cameron?
Yeah.
That's all 12-year-old Curtis wants in this set. That's all I want.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts about Dominaria?
Well, you mentioned to me what the Skyship Weatherlight is, and I... Like, there's literally no affection to me whatsoever on this, right? Like,
you were playing Mario 64 at this point.
I was a cool kid, right? Yeah. No, so...
Don't say that when I'm drinking again, please. You about had a spit take on the air.
Yeah. So, Dominaria, it's cool that we're revisiting this. You were telling me that when Magic first started, like, we didn't shift planes at all, right? Like, we were always in this world of Dominaria. And so that leads to some cool things that they could do with Magic, you know, as far as like what the cards could be for Dominaria. So I guess I'm pleasantly excited. I don't know anything other than that. It could be very, very cool. And like, you know, having like a Karn that's not a Planeswalker would be kind of cool. Maybe like another legendary Karn. Just reprint the old one from way back in the day. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. There's a lot of potential there. We'll see what it is. I mean, I would love to see, like you just said, like what if they just reprinted every single card from Dominaria and there wasn't a single new one? And that'd be really, really cool. That'd be very audacious of them. So yeah.
I think the most realistic, so first of all, Weatherlight being a vehicle, that should just happen. That should be a short putt. That's not a crazy thing to request. Everybody, like, if I want that and I'm not even a lore guy, I'm sure the lore people desperately want it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I made my way through some kind of lore wiki to try and find out what actually happened to the Skyship Weatherlight. And Cameron, it wasn't pretty.
Oh, no.
These stories are not my favorite. But supposedly disappeared or something. But all the Dominaria stuff, Urza, Yawgmoth, all that stuff is Dominaria. And I'm really excited to get all my nostalgia buttons pushed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just one image has me way more excited than Rivals of Ixalan. I know you're shocked by that.
What?
You know how everybody said Amonkhet was like Theros? To me, Ixalan is like Theros, and then I just feel nothing. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I just nothing it.
Mm-hmm. I love that we use Theros as like the punching bag of like recent MTG sets that just were nothing. That's the one I started with, and I have like the most affection for Theros. And I know there's like all sorts of wrong about that, but yeah.
Cameron, I don't even know the middle set like in that block.
I don't either.
You know what I mean? Theros is exemplary in how forgetful it is. Forgettable it is.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like that the girl that you dated your sophomore year of high school. You don't even know her name anymore. You know what I mean? Like, absolutely forgettable.
Renee? Andrea? I don't remember. Yeah.
Whatever. Super forgettable. Sure, she's a lovely person now, but, you know, it just no impact, yeah. And that's fine,
mm-hmm.
Right? Anyway, let's talk wish list.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron, 2018. So 2017, we went over this last week. Lots of changes.
Yeah.
Things getting banned. Things maybe should get banned that aren't, etc. I want to know what you would like for 2018.
Yeah, I hate coming down on this train, but I think for Standard to be successful for 2018, the sooner they ban maybe one or two cards from the energy deck, the better. After playing
which cards do you think, by the way? I'm just putting you on the
spot. I really think Attune with Aether and Aether Hub are both just putting energy, like those are the things to me that really send it over the edge as far as just being not it's so weird because like nothing is crushing, nothing is like just dominating the way that I feel like you know, Stormforge and Jace were, you know, back in the day or whatever, but there's no reason, there's no incentive to play anything else. And with energy as a mechanic as it is, there's not a downside. I mean, you're just given another resource, which is a huge issue moving forward with like these new sets coming out. So number one, I think I want a Standard banning. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I feel like Attune and Aether Hub both are fairly cheap cards. We're not talking about Emrakul or, you know, like some of the more expensive
mm-hmm.
elements. I feel like you can get rid of it. People are still incentivized to play with energy because I still think it's going to be a fine deck without those. But you're also more incentivized to maybe play some other decks out there. So that's number one for me.
So just reaction, I'll let you go through the rest of your list. If there is anything else on your list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I woke up tomorrow and a Toon was gone, like, that would be fine. I actually think Long Tusk Cub could be the second card. Aether Hub seems like, I don't know, like, probably a mistake. You know, like, I'm not saying it's not an overly powerful card, but I think you're cutting off too many things. Like, Control will use Aether Hub. Almost everything will use Aether Hub, and it is a standard all-star, but it's a standard all-star that's across the board for all decks, or if you just really want to cut into energy, a Toon is probably the one that needs to go. But my preference would be no banning. That's just me. Anyway, anything else on your list, Cameron?
The wish list, I don't know if it'll ever come true. More high-level modern legacy vintage play. I want to see more of that. I want to see more deck lists out there just to show that these, especially legacy and modern, are varied and are in a really good place right now. And it's a great way, I think, to kind of show the awesomeness of Magic in ways that standard or limited can't. So I would love to just see more of that on Twitch, officially sanctioned or not, but just high level play. I want to see more of that.
Yeah, and that's something that is a little scary with, you know, we've mentioned it before, but with Arena coming down the pipe. Now, we are getting the 25th anniversary Pro Tour, which will have Legacy, which will be a really good showcase for the format, in my estimation. So it would be nice if we got more of that. Now, I'm going to jump into my list, Cameron. Is that okay?
Absolutely, man.
Because I think the two things the audience could almost say with me at this point. Old Artifact Frame. Dominaria is a great opportunity. Just do it. You know, everyone will see the light once you change the frame back. No one will be unhappy with it. You know, reserve list, of course I want gone. It won't be gone. It should be gone. Mm-hmm. It's been a blight on the game. But what are we going to do? I would like to see them not ban anything this year.
Okay.
I mean that across all formats. I know there's a lot of talk about Storm. MTG Goldfish did a version of a 2018 wish list earlier, I think it was today or yesterday, where they talked about something from Storm needing to go. And look, I would just like stability. I think that's what's healthy for the game. I think Modern's in a place where you can actually let cards into it, not subtract cards. Mm-hmm. And I do think this kind of... this desire on the part of Modern players to have a Modern Pro Tour is a little misplaced. I think they should want Modern Grand Prix. I don't think they should want a Modern Pro Tour. It's like we've forgotten what the Modern Pro Tour led to, you know?
Yeah, right.
You know, it seems like all the guys that played Birthing Pod are also the guys that want a Modern Pro Tour. Guys, need to stop voting against your own interest. You know what I'm saying? Now, here's the last few things I'll say, and these are a little bit more specific, okay? I want a steady, even stream of products across the whole year.
Wait, you don't like everything coming out in December?
I feel like we were a little uneven this year. And look, I didn't buy any Unstable. I don't know if you bought any of the lands or anything.
No, I didn't.
But I feel like a lot of the players that I've been around kind of felt like a little overworked at the end of the year in terms of what WotC was asking for, in terms of their wallet. Mm-hmm. You know, Iconic Masters, whether you like the limited format or not, I know the community is kind of split on that. I feel like for a master set that's that juiced, it did not get nearly the hype that it deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like a lot was kind of going on at the end of the year. And I would like things to be a little bit more even, you know? Also, and I think this is pretty much on target, I want Arena to get a full release. I want it to be out there, and I'm ready to draft an Arena. I still am not supposed to talk about it on the show, which is incredibly frustrating. But I'm ready for the full thing. When I sit down at my computer, I am ready for Arena to be the client and Magic Online to not be the client.
Yeah.
Last thing, Cameron, and this is the sky-high crazy demand, crazy request. I'm ready for Stoneforge to be in Modern.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you made a really good YouTube video about this, right?
A year ago, yeah.
A year ago. So what would the high points be of that? Because I don't want to, like, plagiarize you too much.
No. I mean, I feel like we're in a format right now where turn four is often a time when things still happen and people win. Turn three sometimes happens. I think you're in a place where Grixis Death Shadow is incredibly powerful, incredibly resilient, and it's doing things on turns one, two, and three that are kind of laughable with what you can do with a Stoneforge Mystic and the cards that don't surround it in Modern, right? Because there isn't your Force of Will. There isn't a Brainstorm. There isn't these things that really, I think, put Stoneforge over the top. So, yeah, that's... I think Modern would be fine with a turn three Batterskull being flashed in. I really do think that.
To more of your point, because I agree with every single thing you just said, the printing of Fatal Push makes it, to me, inarguable that Stoneforge... Now, if we lived in a world where we had to choose between Jace and Stoneforge, and I agree that putting both of those in Modern is probably a little too much too soon, I would prefer Stoneforge because I think it gives green-white decks a little bit of a nudge. The Maverick-esque decks, the Hate Bears decks, that don't really exist out there. It gets a push from them, where Jace would just exclusively exist in control decks, in my estimation. But the printing of Fatal Push makes it inarguable to me that there are not a ton of answers to Stoneforge Mystic. Like, Tron often has a Karn, a 7-mana Planeswalker in play.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are we talking about here? And the things that Stoneforge is going to help against, namely Burn, because of this Batterskull issue, right? Like, and of course, we're living in this world where they don't have an answer to your Stoneforge, blah, blah, blah. Like, it would have the right impact on the metagame, but it wouldn't really change what Tron is doing, what Scapeshift is doing, what Storm is doing. Like, we could go on and on. What I think it would actually help is control decks finish faster. I think it would speed up what control decks are doing. I mean, just think, like, a little bit more than a year ago, it was a pretty normal thing for Nahiri to plus up to an Emrakul to be the normal thing that control does to win the game. Like, they still have this problem of, like, winning the game with Celestial Colonnades and stuff like that, where Stoneforge makes that deck a little bit more hit closing speed faster. But this idea that a turn two Stoneforge is going to end the game is just ludicrous, especially since Jit is not in the format. Like,
yeah,
we're living in a world, Cameron, where Tarmogoyf is not good enough in this format. It's like, true. Just think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
And so, yes, and I'm of the belief that Stoneforge Mystic is likely the most powerful creature ever created. Like, in the, like, with a Batterskull, like, it helps you cheat, like, whatever it is, like, 6 mana worth of stuff. But I just think it's time. I think it's time, and it's not a super expensive card, right? Like, we would see it go from $10 to $20, whereas if Jace is unbanned, I think you would see a pretty massive jump, and it would be unreachable for some people, which would be kind of a shame. Anyway, so those are my very specific things. Anyway, so I think 2018 is going to be a good year for Magic. 2017 was just rough for Standard specifically. But hey, man, we're in that 25th anniversary. We might get some sweet stuff. So, Cameron, we're going to get out of this segment. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about some video games. So, Cameron.
Yeah, man.
You've been playing some video games, watching some movies. What have you been doing over these days off that you get?
Yeah, you know, we watched a ton of movies. This is like the time for us to kind of, like, my wife and I, to catch up on everything that we have maybe missed or needed to revisit. So, you know, we went through, like, Doctor Strange and, I mean, everything that was on Netflix, essentially, we watched, right? So we did that. That was really, really enjoyable. I would say, just based off of our Star Wars talk that we had last week, watching Rogue One again, I came away with that, from that, much more positive than I remember coming away originally last year. So if you haven't been watching Rogue One, or you haven't watched Rogue One since last year, I think it is worthwhile to check out and just kind of geek out on all the little fandom things, and there's some like really good elements, story beats, there's some good characters there. So yeah, overall, I was much more positive on that. So,
can we just, because we got some feedback on The Last Jedi on Twitter and on through our show's message email thing, and a lot of it was negative reaction, kind of rebutting what I had said, and I don't want to retread over it or kind of like go point by point, because I definitely think, you know, hey, people are entitled to their own opinions, and I still think The Last Jedi was exceptional. I don't know where it's going to be, but I do think, I should say, I think it's been interesting to see how controversial it's been. I would point you to the Slash Filmcast did a 2-hour talk about addressing the criticisms and what they think of those criticisms. But I talked to you about this before, how much of the criticism, like real criticism, not the crazy, insane, why is a chick a Jedi criticism stuff. But more like the criticism that's like grounded in stuff that's on the extended universe, the novels. Mm-hmm. And they touch upon that. And that's something I never really considered or thought about. And, you know, it's an interesting perspective for sure. Anyway, so Cameron, you've been playing some games this week too, huh?
Yeah. So one of the things I picked up because it was released on iPad, I'm a big fan of the series, and I have yet to play it because I never really played it on PC, was Civilization VI. So I played a ton of Civilization IV and V and loved those games. I mean, I put in crazy amount of hours on Civilization IV whenever that was released. I don't remember when that was released, but they're a very, very good, you know, strategy game, right? So you start,
and you like
off,
Civilization Revolution too, right, on console?
That's right. I forgot about that. That came out like an 08 or something like that. Yeah, so I enjoy strategy civilization games. I think they're super fun. They're interesting, and they have like a certain charm to them. Like, they don't follow any sort of like real history per se, but they just take like elements from all these great civilizations that have existed throughout, you know, 4,000 years or whatever. And they kind of say, what if like this one was able to expand out with a strong military, with a strong science or strong espionage or whatever, and what would happen, you know? And so you were always kind of like in these like interesting competitions with these other civilizations kind of going on. You can play against a computer, and it's super fun. And I've always thought like this would be a great thing to have as a mobile experience, where I can play for 10 turns, stop, go away, come back, play another 10 turns. It just seems to be kind of rightly suited for that. The way that, like, I feel like XCOM is another strategy game, is really well suited to, like, I think a portable experience. And this is really good. It's the full game. Like, I mean, you're getting a full PC experience on the iPad, and it runs, I mean, granted, I'm using an iPad Pro from last year. It runs incredibly well. Like, I can't get over, like, it doesn't chug, it doesn't, it runs exactly how you want a civilization game to run. The art style's there, like, they've optimized it for touch instead of a mouse and keyboard. It's really, really good. And it's available on iOS, and I think up until January 4th maybe, it's $30 instead of a full $60. So, I mean, you're getting a lot of game. And if you even are interested in this and you own an iPad, I would totally tell you to check it out, because it's super fun. I love it. So yeah, Civilization.
Well, it's really fascinating that they have a full release, like full costing release on iPad, 'cause that's considered kind of a, platform where you're not supposed to go above $5 or whatever. Right?
Yeah. Like, it was like, I remember when XCOM was released, it was like a big thing that it was like $25 or whatever when it was released. So yeah.
Yeah, I got a, and of course it went on sale or something to like $20, and I scooped it up. I've played XCOM on console, and I played it on iPad, and I loved both experiences, and I'm yet to buy XCOM 2. That's so sad, isn't it?
Yeah. I haven't either, but yeah, I know what you mean.
So, hey, Cameron, I want to talk about two games with you. Mm-hmm. Three. Strike that. Three.
Five.
seven games. Actually, five. Real quick, hey, Eternal. came out with their new expansion over the last couple weeks. I played some of it on iPad. It's exceptional. That game is so good for a card game. It actually just blows Magic Online out of the water. It's really embarrassing. It's a great, fun game. And they've gotten to these mechanics now that are making it fully digital. Like, there's a mechanic called Nightfall where the whole screen goes dark and it, like, goes to your opponent's turn and they have to go through their turn on Nightfall, and which is pretty cool and has, like, different effects on the game. So, Eternal's great. Hey, Forza 7. I also have that picked up. And guess what, Cameron? No. It's really, really, really attractive.
Don't tell me about this. No.
It's really great. If you put it on the full 4K experience, which was 63 GB download for the high-res textures. But it's a great-looking game. It's a racing game. It plays like Forza, so...
So, you just saying that, like, I just want to, like, make a special trip down to your place just to experience this in 4K, Xbox One, all the...
Well, Cameron...
Hoot and a Hanny.
Here's the game that I'm the most conflicted about, and this is a little game you might have heard about called PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. You ever heard of this game?
It's got a 10 on Polygon, man.
I don't know that I've ever felt more comfortable about loving a game in my entire life. I love this game. I love it. It is conceptually kind of awful. You know, the art style is super bland. On a technical level, the game is horrific on Xbox. Like, should not have been released. Sometimes the frame rate will go to the low teens. The controller mapping is embarrassingly bad. Every button does two things to try and keep up with the PC mouse and keyboard. And yet, I don't know that I've had... laughed harder at a video game in my life. I don't know that I've felt more tense. I've been in second place one time and third place another time. So for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, this is a game that came out on PC, like full release, but it came out on PC like 8 months ago as a beta. And the thing is this, there's this huge island. You fly over it, you parachute down to the island. There are 100 guys and you're one of them. And it's Hunger Games. You're trying to be the last guy alive. Mm-hmm. Every man for himself. You land with nothing. It's like this not inhabited island anymore. You scavenge your stuff, and every so many minutes, they have this big circle that closes in until the arena gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And first of all, it's hysterical. You end up doing all these incredibly dumb or hilarious things. You realize that if you were, in fact, in the Hunger Games, you would die in some really embarrassing fashion. Not like cool, like going out like, you know, the people in the movie The Hunger Games, but like accidentally looking behind you and then realizing you had just driven your Jeep off a cliff, that kind of thing. But the game, once you realize you're in the top 10, the game is really tense. Like nothing I've ever experienced in a game before. You suddenly really care about the fact that you're going to live or die in this game. And I just cannot recommend it highly enough. It is a total blast. I'm just playing solos. Like, I know you can do pairs and you can do squads of four. And I don't do those. But yeah, dude, awesome. Awesome stuff. And then I just also want to highlight what you mentioned for people that own the Switch, Skyrim, Cameron.
Oh, yeah, man.
The hot new games. It's alarming how well Skyrim runs on that thing.
It's shocking, yeah.
I mean, it looks really good. Like, definitely better than the PS3 version.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it runs... I mean, granted, you know, like, I played it day one, and it was, like, janky as all could be on the PS3, but, yeah, it runs really well.
Yeah. Big criticism is they really should make the text bigger. Some of us are old men playing the Switch, guys. It's not okay. I shouldn't have to get out my, bifocals. To read your game. But then, you know, the other thing I would tell you is make sure you get into those menus and turn on the subtitles. Because when you're around other people and you're trying to play Skyrim, it's really hard to do without subtitles on because so much of the ambient talking, you know, matters in those games. I've definitely never... I don't like the Bethesda games like you like them. Like, I just like them okay.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely prefer the Fallout series, which is weird because you would think the Skyrim style would be mine.
Mm-hmm.
But turns out the thing that I hate about the combat, meaning the combat I think is bad, actually works pretty well in a portable because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you just have to hit the trigger. That's all you have to do. Just keep on hitting that trigger.
Yeah, hey, I'm swinging this mace around.
Yep.
Hopefully I'm making contact. Should be cool. Anyway, Cameron, so PUBG, just know, especially because I'm playing it on an Xbox One X, and it runs like crap. I can't imagine. It must run really bad on a regular Xbox. But on PC, I think it just got its first full release, and it has a second map.
Nice, okay.
But yeah, anyway, so highest possible recommendations for those and Eternal. Last thing I'll say is I've had a bunch of people message me asking what my Eternal username is and if they can add me. It's really complicated. Get a pen and paper. It's Curtis. Pretty insane, right?
That's
pretty
insane. Yeah.
So, hopefully I catch you guys on there sometime. If you'd like to get in touch with Cameron, how can they find you?
It's all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.